Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump made headlines over the weekend when he told rallygoers that he would not only not help protect our NATO allies if they weren't paying their dues, as he says, but that he would actively encourage Vladimir Putin to invade them if they don't do what Trump wants. And Trump's got some other bad news this week, as he is begging the United States Supreme Court to save him by granting him full immunity to commit whatever crimes he chooses. And Trump is also trying to remake the entire Republican Party in his image by pushing for his daughter-in-law to become the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. We also have Republicans pulled another witness for the Hunter Biden and Joe Biden investigations this week, and you probably won't be shocked to learn that, like every other witness before her, this witness also said President Biden was not involved in any way with any of his son's business dealings. And Republican Senator J.D. Vance accidentally admitted this week that if Trump gets back into office, he's probably going to commit more crimes. All that and much more is coming up on this week's show. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel that now has over 1 million subscribers. That is youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. We have to talk about what Donald Trump said over the weekend at a speech in South Carolina when he claimed that while he was president of the United States, he would tell NATO member countries, in other words, our allies in Europe, that if they don't pay their dues, not only would he not do anything if Russia decided to invade them, he would actually encourage Russia to invade them for not, as Trump likes to say, paying their fair share for funding of NATO. This comment, of course, is insane. And that's actually not my word for it. That is coming from CNN anchor Christiane Amanpour. Here is what Amanpour had to say after Trump made these comments. And the only reason I'm reading this is because it's probably the most accurate analysis of what Trump said that I have seen so far. She said, "You know, it is insane. It literally is insane." In one sentence, President Trump turned the entire post-war transatlantic security doctrine on its head. "It's almost unbelievable. It's an insanity to say that. That's the existential crisis the world faces right now. The post-World War II global security operation is based on America and its 30 other NATO allies defending each other and coming to each other's rescue and protecting and securing democracy and security in the West." Accurate statement. Like, every bit of it, accurate. What Trump said is insane. It is crazy. A crazy person would say that. And he said it. We are at a point where Donald Trump is making it clear that not only does he hate our allies, and that was evident during his entire administration, but he loves our enemies. Now, he's not trying to make peace with our enemies. He's not trying to be friends with them to talk them off the ledge, so to speak. He wants them to do these horrible things. He wants to buddy up and partner with them to possibly do horrible things. This is the threat that Donald Trump poses not just to the United States, but to the entire planet. He was restrained to a degree during his first term. If he gets back into office, as everybody has explained a million times over at this point, there will be no restraints. He's going to make sure that his entire administration, top to bottom, is packed with spineless yes people. That's what Project 2025 is all about, by the way. He will cozy up to these dictators. He will allow them to do whatever they want, to kill whoever they want, to invade whatever country they want. And as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, he may even send our troops to help them do this. That is a threat, again, not just to this country, but to every country on Earth. Donald Trump could drag us into conflicts that result in the United States itself being attacked, where our former allies have to turn against us. That is the threat that he poses if he gets back into the White House. And what's even more sick about this is the fact that you have plenty of Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio stand out among them, who are totally okay with this. Here's what Lindsey Graham said on Sunday when he was asked about Trump's comments. He said, "Give me a break. I mean, it's Trump. All I can say is while Trump was president, nobody invaded anybody. I think the point here is to, in his way, to get people to pay." First of all, that's actually not true. There were plenty of invasions. Maybe not big countries. Russia wasn't invading anybody at the time. But other countries, Middle Eastern countries, we saw invasions. We saw missile strikes. We saw innocent civilians killed. We saw innocent countries targeted by people that we claim are our allies, like Saudi Arabia. So don't sit there, Lindsey Graham, and act like nobody got attacked during Trump's time. Hell yeah, people got attacked all the damn time. American soldiers were killed while Trump was president. But this is what they do. They excuse it. They accept it. And then they embrace it. It's not just Trump, folks. It's damn near every single Republican in Washington, D.C., because they will always, as Trump himself said just a few months ago, they will always bend the knee. He's already got enough yes people. And if he gets back into office, he's going to have even more. And that's going to bring about hell on earth. It looks like President Biden may finally be coming to the realization that Merrick Garland, his Attorney General of the United States, sucks. And if that is the conclusion that President Biden reaches, he is 100% correct. Merrick Garland from day one, hell, Merrick Garland back when he was nominated for the Supreme Court by Barack Obama, he sucked then. Now, I'm going to explain what Biden's frustration is, because there is many. It's not just the recent Robert Hur report, but Biden apparently has many gripes about Merrick Garland. But I do want to point something out. Right back when President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the United States Supreme Court following the death of Scalia, the seat that, of course, Mitch McConnell obstructed and allowed Trump to fill later on, Pap and I did segments here on Ring of Fire talking about why Merrick Garland was a bad pick. Corporatist guy, soft on corporate crime, horrid on environmental issues, absolutely terrible on protecting the environment. So we warned y'all back then how bad Merrick Garland actually was. And then when Biden came into office, he felt sorry for Merrick Garland because you had your Supreme Court seat stolen. So let me pick you to make up for that. And it's been an unmitigated disaster for President Biden. Now, of course, right now, President Biden is very angry over the fact that Garland did nothing to actually read through the special prosecutor's report that included tons of political attacks on President Biden that had no bearing on the investigation at all, saying he's just a feeble, forgetful old man with a bad memory. That's not relevant to anything. But okay, you included it. And Merrick Garland actually had the authority. He could have previewed the report and instructed passages like those overtly political passages to be removed. Nothing wrong with that. He could have done it. He had the authority and he chose not to because he's a coward. Also, Biden has been annoyed by the fact over the years that Garland could have actually started the DOJ investigations into Donald Trump a lot earlier than he actually did. I mean, technically, as soon as he took office, we should have had the January 6th investigation. Instead, it didn't start till about a year and a half, almost 2 years later. And as Biden, according to these reports, points out to his aides, Trump had already been convicted by this point. If Garland had done his job when he came into office, Trump would have already been convicted. But Garland didn't do that. In fact, he waited until Donald Trump announced that he was running for president to even appoint a special prosecutor. And that was in November of 2022. So Garland dropped the ball there. Biden's also angry that they're kind of slow walking the investigation into his own son. He thinks, you know, you really could have done this much faster. And the longer you drag this out, the more likely it is you push him back into addiction. And that's not his concern as a president. That's his concern as an actual loving father. But I'm going to go one further, Biden. I'm going to mention something you didn't mention. And this is something that Pap and I have mentioned on this show. It's the fact that Merrick Garland has also allowed corporate prosecutions, white-collar prosecutions, to drop to an all-time low, even lower than when Trump was president. So we're not holding white-collar criminals accountable. We're not holding corporations accountable when they poison and kill people with their drugs or environmental toxins. You're not doing your due diligence on the Trump investigations. You bent over backwards to appoint a Trump guy to investigate Biden so that you didn't look partisan. You're a friggin' failure. Let me read you this. This is from a Democratic donor, spoke to Politico on the condition of anonymity. Here's what he said. And I love this because it's so accurate. What Democrats do is they bend over backwards not to look partisan, and then they end up hiring people that are partisan, but in the other direction. There's no question in my mind that the villain here is Merrick Garland. Because that's what Democrats do, right? They always, well, the other side does it this way and that's bad. And sure, it's bad. So we've got to go out of our way to make sure we do the exact opposite so that nobody accuses us of being partisan. And then what happens every damn time? They accuse the Democrats of being partisan with it. Doesn't matter. Just like when Democrats in 2016 and 2020 with Bernie Sanders, like, we can't elect him. They'll call us all socialists. Then what did they do with Hillary and Biden? They called them both socialists. They still do. So the Democrats are really bad at freaking out about things because everything they think won't happen to them always ends up happening to them. And Merrick Garland is a perfect representation of that. And if Biden wins a second term, the first thing he needs to do the day after the election this year is tell Merrick Garland, get the hell out. I'm going to replace you with somebody competent. I have long said here on Ring of Fire that Marco Rubio is, in my opinion, the dumbest person in the Senate. Now, I can't even say the dumbest person in Congress as a whole, because then he's competing against, you know, Louie Gohmert and Jim Jordan and Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene. But in the Senate, Marco Rubio is definitely the dumbest. But thanks to his pathetic performance over this past weekend, I can also now say with confidence that Marco Rubio is the biggest coward and the most pathetic loser in the United States Senate. So not only were you already the dumbest, but you are now the most pathetic. In fact, there's a word I want to use to describe you, but obviously, you know, I can't. It's not a word I should be saying here, but it rhymes with you being a big wussy, if that gives people any idea of what I want to say about Marco Rubio. But here's what happened this weekend. Marco Rubio sat down on CNN for an interview with Jake Tapper. And Jake Tapper asked him about three very important things. The first one, of course, being Donald Trump's claims that if a NATO country doesn't pay their dues, he's going to tell Russia to go invade you. Here's how that went down. Rubio said when Tapper asked him, are you comfortable with him suggesting that he wouldn't defend NATO countries and actually he would invite Putin and Russia to invade them? And Rubio said, well, that's not what happened, and that's not how I view that statement. He was talking about something, a story that he talked about happened in the past. What he's basically saying is, if you see the comments, he said NATO was broke or busted until he took over because people weren't paying their dues. And then he told a story about how he used leverage to get people to step up to the plate and become more active. All of which, for the record, is untrue. Like, that didn't happen. Trump just didn't want the U.S. paying as much as they had been. The vast majority of all NATO countries were also chipping in. The reason the United States pay more, which is something Trump and Marco Rubio can't understand because they're painfully stupid, is because we have more at stake and we also have more money. So our dues were higher than everybody else's. Like, why don't you tell the real truth there, Rubio, if you can wrap your tiny little brain around it? He then... By the way, Jake Tapper then asks, they consistently criticize President Joe Biden. Go check out their Twitter feed. They mock him all the time. They say that this is better than nothing. It should become law. Are you saying that the Border Patrol Union is wrong? Asking them about Republicans tanking the border bill, and Rubio said, yes, if that's what they still believe, they're wrong. It's not better than nothing. So Rubio's defending Trump for killing the border bill, defending Trump for his statements about NATO, but okay. How about Donald Trump's attacks on Nikki Haley's husband, right? Because over the weekend, Donald Trump's like, where's Nikki Haley's husband? He's disappeared. He didn't disappear. He's actually serving with the National Guard in Africa. So he's actually doing a service for his country. I have no love for Nikki Haley, but let's be honest here. Her husband is serving our country, and that deserves respect. Marco Rubio, when asked about Trump's comments, said this. I think they're part of the increasing nastiness of this campaign and every campaign in American politics. I mean, they're calling him a grumpy old man. They're attacking Donald Trump. I remember when Melania Trump was not visible for some period of time. You have people in the media and others snickering and speculating that she was no longer with Donald Trump. We found out later, of course, she was caring for her ailing mother, who was in the last weeks and days of her life. So this sort of nastiness, you know, Trump gives as good as he gets. Marco, do you remember the 2016 presidential campaign? Do you remember that Donald Trump slapped you with a nickname that still sticks with you today? Lil Marco, that's what he called you. Lil Marco, that's your nickname. And it's not a term of endearment. He was using it to make fun of your stature. And here you are, bending over backwards, twisting yourself into some kind of disgusting pretzel to defend everything this man says and does. You are the most pathetic member of the United States Senate, and your cowardice is an absolute disgrace to this country. So a poll came out this week that the media kind of misconstrued to the American public because they really only wanted everybody to focus on one part of the poll. Now, this poll was conducted by ABC News and Ipsos. And so when ABC News published the poll, they did it with the headline, "Overwhelming majority of Americans think Biden is too old for another term. Poll." So based on their headline alone, which is how they announced the results of this poll, you would think a majority of Americans only think Biden is too old to be president. But the poll also found that a vast majority of American voters also think Donald Trump is too old to be president. But ABC News committed journalistic malpractice by making you think that the poll only found voters think Biden is too old. They also committed a bit of journalistic malpractice by burying the lead. Because we get it. Polls have already shown us that voters think both people are too old. That's not uncommon, and it sure as hell isn't news. What is news, and I'll tell you the reason why ABC News didn't want to highlight this part, is a little noticed part of this poll. Americans find there is blame to go around on Congress's failure to pass legislation intended to decrease the number of illegal crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border, with about the same number blaming the Republicans in Congress, 53%, the Democrats, 51%, and Biden, 49%. Fewer, 39%, blame Trump. 39% say Trump is to blame for that border deal, that bipartisan immigration deal that was killed last week by Republicans. 51% blame the Democrats, 49% blame Biden. Only 39% blame Trump. Trump has actively gone out there and taken credit for doing this. Republicans in Congress have said Trump wants us to kill it, so we will kill it. Republicans in Congress have gone out there and taken credit for killing this bill. It should be 100% of the public blames the Republicans and 100% of the public blames Donald Trump. But instead, most people blame it on the Democrats and Biden combined. That is a failure of the United States media, starting with ABC News, and that's why that wasn't their headline. If the media were honest, instead of always doing their both sides-ism, Democrats and Republicans are virtually indistinguishable. I want to smack y'all across the face when you say shit like that. They're not indistinguishable. This particular piece of legislation was 100% dead because of 100% of Republicans. They're the ones who did this. They're the ones who allowed Trump to bully them into doing it. And if the media is not reporting that, then of course the public's going to think the Democrats are to blame. There is no excuse, no excuse at all for those numbers not being 100% blame Republicans. Other than media, including ABC News, is not telling the full story, and they're not even caring that people don't know the truth. There was a time in this country, long before my time, by the way, when the media actually cared about telling the real story. When you had real journalists. And the anchors of these news programs were actual journalists. Now it's people who go into broadcasting. Oh, I don't need to know how to research my own stories. All I need to know is how to read off a teleprompter. And I've got somebody smarter than me behind the stage typing in what goes on the teleprompter. And those people have agendas. But I don't care. I won't even catch it as I read off my teleprompter. This, as we've said for ever since the beginning of Ring of Fire, 20 years ago now, the media, the corporate-controlled media, has made us all dumber. The media is dead. There's no journalists. And they don't even care about giving you the truth. These numbers in this poll represent a failure of the American media. And that's why ABC News chose to bury the lead on this story. Even though Ronna McDaniel has not officially stepped down as the chair of the Republican National Committee, and allegedly is not necessarily planning on doing it, even though reports have said that she's definitely planning on doing it. Anyway, she hasn't stepped down. Nevertheless, Donald Trump endorsed a list of people that he wants to take over the Republican Party itself, the Republican National Committee, when McDaniel does in fact step down. And one of those people is Laura Trump, his daughter-in-law, the wife of his son, Eric. Donald Trump is now endorsing Laura to be the co-chair of the Republican Party itself. Now, he wants Michael Whatley, who is currently the chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party, to be the overall chair, but he wants his daughter-in-law, Laura, to be the co-chair. Laura, mind you, has no experience in politics at all. Her degree is, in fact, in broadcasting, and she spent a few years at Fox News, and now she just kind of does some stuff for Trump's campaign, but that alone is not necessarily enough to warrant a position at the top of the Republican Party. She knows nothing of fundraising. She knows nothing of building an infrastructure for a political party, but none of that matters because Laura Trump is not being pitched to be a part of the RNC because of her credentials. She's being pitched to be the co-chair of the Republican National Committee so that Donald Trump can effectively constantly have one hand on the steering wheel. He is pushing for a complete Trump family takeover of the Republican Party itself. That is what this is. And he'll get his way. Now, Whatley, the guy he wants to be the, chair, he's an election denier. He has pushed Donald Trump's false claims about the 2020 election, so he's a good, loyal Trumpist, but that's not good enough, right? You can't just have somebody who agrees with everything you say. You got to have somebody that's willing to actually take a step back and let you drive the car for a while instead of just turning wherever you tell them to turn. Sometimes you want to be in that driver's seat, and putting Laura Trump in that position gives Donald Trump that power. And that's why he wants that. It would, of course, also solidify the Trumps as a political family for possibly years to come, even after Donald Sr. is no longer in politics. This is a terrifying thought if you're a Republican. Now, I'm not a Republican. I'm happily registered as a Democrat. I am firmly on the left, and I love this idea. I think it's a brilliant plan for the Republican Party to put a woman in charge of their party who has absolutely no idea how to run a political party and is in fact just a puppet for Donald Trump to do whatever the hell he wants. I think it's great. We have seen the damage that Donald Trump himself has caused to the Republican Party ever since he burst onto the scene in 2015. He's the guy who picked Ronna McDaniel to take over the party, and she's been an unmitigated disaster for them, effectively bankrupting the party. So, yeah, I'm good to stick with Donald Trump's picks because the man only values loyalty instead of knowledge. So, this is a brilliant plan. I hope the Republican Party goes through with it. And again, they will. If this is what Trump wants, this is what will happen. And it's going to be the worst disaster. They're going to look back at the Ronna McDaniel years fondly after what Donald Trump is about to do to their party. That's how bad this is going to be for them. Well, another week has gone by, which means another witness for the Republican Party's investigations into both Hunter Biden and Joseph Biden has once again undermined their entire case. It is now effectively happening like clockwork, where every week Republicans have another little closed door hearing. They bring in an alleged star witness who tells them the same thing that the other star witnesses had previously said, which is that we don't know of any involvement of President Biden in his son Hunter's business at all, ever, for any reason. All of the things that you want me to say, I cannot say because those would be lies. That is effectively what every single witness has now told them, including Karen Tramontano, who is the CEO of Blue Star Strategies, who actually did work for Burisma, where Hunter Biden was, you know, on the board, made all that money. Republicans pissed off he made all that money. And Republicans in this hearing on Monday, again, closed doors, so we only have snippets from reports. They were trying to get Ms. Tramontano to tell them that not only did President Biden, then Vice President Biden, get involved with the son's business deals, but that Burisma bribed President Biden to actually change U.S. policy to benefit the company. And here's what she said to that. Neither Hunter Biden nor then Vice President Joe Biden had any financial or other involvement in my firm's work with Burisma. I am also not aware of any financial arrangements or compensation to then Vice President Biden related to his son's business dealings with Burisma or otherwise. She also denied anything about any kind of bribe that Burisma had offered to President Biden. So again, like clockwork, Republicans, led of course by Jim Jordan in this particular one, James Comer in the other House oversight investigations, get humiliated. Which is why all of this, by the way, is taking place behind closed doors. It's like when they didn't want Hunter Biden to testify publicly. Of course you don't, because he's going to make you guys all look like idiots. Not difficult to do. But if you are so hell-bent on convincing the public that President Biden was doing something illegal, wouldn't you want the public to see it? If you actually had what you call star witnesses, wouldn't you want the public to hear what these people have to say? No, you wouldn't, because you know that none of your witnesses are going to come up and validate any of your idiotic lies about what actually took place. And you know how we know that, folks? I was unaware of this, or at least it had escaped my memory, I guess. Back in 2020, Republicans, who then controlled the Senate, actually conducted an investigation into President Biden and Burisma. In fact, Mrs. Tramontano here had already testified in front of the Senate. So this is actually her second time having to testify in an identical investigation, even though the first investigation concluded, yeah, we got no evidence, let's end it. But they were really trying because it was a presidential election year. Oh, we're going to take down the Democrat guy. And then, oops, we couldn't because there's no evidence to back any of this up. So all of this stuff happening now with this investigation is just a rehash of what had already been concluded many years ago. But these Republicans aren't going to stop. They're going to keep doing this, and it's going to keep biting them on the behind. Every time their witnesses tell the public, Biden didn't do anything wrong. In a memo to his Republican colleagues in the United States Senate this week, Republican Senator J.D. Vance accidentally admitted that Donald Trump is probably going to commit some crimes in the future. And he did it in this memo by arguing that, hey, we can't pass this Ukraine aid package, which, of course, ended up passing in the Senate this week, because if we do, you'll remember the Democrats, their first impeachment of Donald Trump was because he actually withheld aid from Ukraine that Congress had passed. So if we do it again and pass this aid and then Trump wins the election, he's probably going to break the law again, J.D. Vance essentially tells us. Here's what Vance put in his memo to his fellow Republicans. If President Trump were to withdraw from or pause financial support for the war in Ukraine in order to bring the conflict to a peaceful conclusion, over the objections of career experts, it would amount to the same fake violation of budget law from the first impeachment under markedly similar facts and circumstances. Partisan Democrats would seize on the opportunity to impeach him once again. Yeah, you see, JD, you're leaving out some very critical backstory, though, with the first impeachment. It wasn't just over some budgetary issues. Trump didn't want to give him the money. Trump withheld the money unless Ukraine dug up dirt on President Biden and his son Hunter. See, that was the whole thing. He withheld the aid, which he was legally required to give, in exchange for political dirt. So he was abusing his power and violating some budget laws along the way, but that was kind of incidental. But I do love the fact that you're basically admitting that, hey, we can't pass aid packages because there's a good chance Trump's going to break the law again. I mean, you've seen this guy, 91 felony charges against him. I mean, he can't stop himself from breaking the law, right, JD? That's the point you're trying to make? Because this is not a tit-for-tat situation here. This is not Democrats lurching at every opportunity to impeach Donald Trump. You're basically admitting to the world Trump cannot help himself and he is going to continuously do things that he is legally not allowed to do. Doesn't exactly seem like the kind of thing that a guy who wants to be the vice presidential candidate should be out there admitting, but you kind of did. And you didn't realize it either, did you? No, you're not that bright. But hey, look on the bright side, buddy. You're probably still in line for that vice presidential pick. I think you're pretty far down that line, but you're not out of the running yet. So maybe you can redeem yourself, but hopefully not. I think the entire country needs to understand what you're admitting here and why you're accidentally pointing out that a second term of Donald Trump would be an absolute disaster for the entire country, because we will be dealing with a man who cannot stop himself, as J.D. Vance points out, from constantly breaking the law. On Monday, Donald Trump's lawyers submitted their filing with the U.S. Supreme Court, asking them to do two things. One, put a stay on the decision from the D.C. appellate court that had effectively immediately remanded the case back to the trial court so they could proceed. So they're asking him, get rid of that, him, talking about SCOTUS, I accidentally said him and meant them. But anyway, they're saying, SCOTUS, don't let that trial proceed just yet and take up the case of immunity. But they add, take your time, right? I mean, we don't need to do anything rash here. Obviously, this is a pretty big decision. So, this needs some careful thought and consideration because, of course, Donald Trump's lawyers are trying to delay. And this time it may not work so well for them. Here's the thing. The appellate court that, again, last week had ruled that Donald Trump does not have immunity. He is effectively citizen Trump. They kind of covered all their bases, according to the legal experts, with their decision. They almost made it appeal proof, which was not just to dismantle every legal argument that Trump's lawyers put forward. They did, of course, do that. But the big thing was the fact that they gave the Supreme Court an out. And that out is the Supreme Court saying, listen, we've seen the appellate court's decision. Based on their reasoning, we find no reason to take up the case. So that's a good out for the Supreme Court to keep their hands clean on this matter. Because if the Supreme Court decides to weigh in on this, it's going to get messy for them no matter which way they decide. But they do have several options here. Obviously, the first one that I mentioned, they can say, nope, lower court got it right. We're not going to touch it. That decision stands. See you later. You don't have immunity. Second thing is they can take it up. And from there, we have multiple different options. And I think one of the most likely ones, and this is actually one that I haven't discussed before, I think part of what they may do is kind of dismantle piece by piece and possibly give him immunity on some issues and not on the others. Here's what I mean by that. We, of course, have the conspiracy against the United States charges that Trump is facing in the January 6th trial. Now, that, of course, is the fake elector scheme. The fake elector scheme, the lawyers that were being paid, they went state by state trying to get these things set up. They were being paid from Donald Trump's presidential campaign. Therefore, that fact alone, that it was paid for by the campaign, shows that it was not the actions of a president, it was the actions of a candidate. Therefore, he's not entitled to immunity there. I could see the court doing that. And then anything related to the Capitol riot itself, they could argue, well, he gave a speech, presidents give speeches, that was a presidential act, so he has immunity there. So they could kind of do a 50-50. Like, he's immune from these charges, he's not immune from these because he was a candidate. So that's one option. Then obviously they could say, nope, he's got total immunity, or they could say he has no immunity because he was acting as a candidate. So they can do this one of many ways, but I think the thing that they would love to do is to not take it up at all. That is my thinking here. And I do think that they will rule on the Colorado case saying you can't kick Trump off the ballot. And they know they're going to get huge backlash for that. So to compensate, I think they're going to not give him immunity. So I don't know. That's just my theory. We'll see how it plays out. But based on the legal arguments that Trump's lawyers have put forward, they don't have a case. I mean, listen to this. For the purpose of this criminal case, former President Trump has become citizen. I'm sorry, that's the ruling. Ha ha! Here it is. Without immunity from criminal prosecution, the presidency as we know it will cease to exist. They said that it will begin destructive cycles of recrimination, will hang like a millstone around every future president's neck, an immediately irreparable injury to the First Amendment interests of Trump. Yada, yada, yada. Not legal arguments. So they don't have a case. They know they don't have a case, but they're throwing everything at the wall with this filing. They lost badly at the appellate court, and I think the Supreme Court should do the smart thing, not issue a ruling on it at all, and stick with the lower court's decision. Keep your hands clean. You're not taking one side or the other. That's the smartest route for the Supreme Court. And that's all the time we have for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.